From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. That music means we're here. We're here, we're live, and we're going to do things differently as we told you last week. We're not going to have in-studio guests on Connections, but you're going to hear live guest conversations with guests on the phone and via other technology that's a little over my head, but we're going to do our best here. We're going to be right here with you, lifting each other up in constructive ways, and sometimes very direct and challenging ways. That is part of the deal. Direct, challenging conversations with each other to make sure we're all doing what we can do throughout these challenging times. So before we get to the conversation this hour, I want to kind of lay out some ideas for what we're going to do going forward. Obviously, we've got to talk a lot about what's going on with the virus. I mean, there's no question because there's a lot of information people need. We don't want to be a clearinghouse for anxiety. That's not the goal here. And it's okay to be anxious. These are hard times. But we don't want panic. So we're going to have conversations that are appropriate, that help each other, that lift each other up, that are constructive, and sometimes that are tough and direct. We're also going to occasionally have stuff to take our minds off things, because we must. We do this every hour. Man, oh man, you get all tired of me, even more so than normally. So in a moment, we're gonna shift our focus away from the virus, and we're going to talk about some lighter stuff coming up. Then in our second hour, we're going to get back to that story, but we're going to focus on small business owners who are scared. This is a time for empathy for them, because as they hear people told to stay home and don't go to their businesses, they think weeks or months from now, my dream is going to collapse. And that's hard. That's a hard moment. So we're going to get back to that. But first, let me welcome our colleague, Brett Dahlberg, outstanding WXXI health reporter, who's here with us in studio. Hi.
Hi. I am sitting a safe distance from you.
You are. You are. How are you?
I'm all right. A lot changed over the weekend. And so that's why I'm feeling like it's important to be in here to talk about it. There's just a lot to keep up with. And so we can bring you some of that.
Okay. So why don't you take us through where we are now and what the local leaders want the community to be hearing.
Sure. So we have 10 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Monroe County as of last night. So just to sort of give a feel for the timeline, on Tuesday last week, we had one case. On Friday, we had one more confirmed. And on Sunday, so last night, 8 more cases were confirmed. And so what this looks like, at least initially, is the sort of start of an exponential curve. However, you know, the sample size is still small. And so it's impossible to say at this point, just like it's impossible to say whether we've found all of the cases locally. We almost certainly haven't.
No, we haven't.
It's also impossible to say whether this sort of exponential rise will continue or exactly what the curve will look like. But other things that have changed include some of the recommendations that we're getting from government leaders. And so just last Wednesday, this first cut is our local public health commissioner, the commissioner of public health in Monroe County, Dr. Michael Mendoza.
Let's clarify again.
Yes.
This is last Wednesday.
This is last Wednesday, less than a week
ago. And
what
Brett is going to do is demonstrate the difference of where we were days ago and where we are now.
Right, right. And so here's the first cut from last Wednesday talking about what we would expect and what we would hope for from business owners in Rochester.
Gatherings are risky, but restaurants, not necessarily, particularly if you wash your hands, if you cough into your sleep, if you undertake all of the precautions that we've been talking about, there really is no reason to be fearful of going outside, enjoying the cuisine here in Rochester, and doing what, as best as we possibly can, what we normally do in March in Rochester.
Gatherings are risky, but restaurants not necessarily, the public health commissioner said last Wednesday. Now, this second piece of tape is from yesterday. So this is Dr. Michael Mendoza, public health commissioner of Monroe County, on yesterday.
4 days later, yeah.
We are a social being, and we like to be around one another. And at the same time, we also know that restaurants and bars can represent a risk. And so I am asking for your cooperation to evaluate whether you can close down as a restaurant or a bar.
And so here we go in just a matter of days from, you know, gatherings are risky, restaurants not so much, to if you can, close down. And so one of the things that you're going to talk about on the show is what this all means for business owners. From a public health perspective, the idea is let's create as much distance as we can between people in an effort to slow the spread of the disease. It's not an effort to stop the spread. It's an effort to slow it. The idea being, as we've been talking about, that we want to avoid overloading the healthcare system at any one time. And several of the epidemiologists, the people who study this stuff that I've talked to at Rochester Regional Health and at the University of Rochester, say there really isn't a time that's too early to do this. However, that's from a medical point of view. From a human behavior point of view, and this is something that Dr. Mendoza talked about at these news conferences, from a human behavior point of view, it is potentially possible to be too early. That is, if you tell people to change their behavior because a disaster is coming and the disaster doesn't come, people might revert back to the behavior.
Or doesn't come quickly if they don't see signs.
If they don't see evidence of it, right. They might revert back to the behavior that you want them to avoid. And by that time, the disaster is upon us and we've gone back to the behavior that we wanted to be avoiding because of that disaster. And so from a health perspective, people are telling me it's not too early to shut down. From a human behavior perspective, it's really hard to make that call.
That's fair. And I think that offers some nuance as to the hard calls our local leaders have been forced to make. Now, as we pointed out last week, even when they were making those comments about bars, restaurants, gyms, churches, there was plenty of inconsistency. And there are some of the leading epidemiologists who have said, well in advance of this, shut it all down. Shut it all down now if you want to avoid the Italy curve, which is what we're on right now.
So there are a couple things there. One is, you know, I am a reporter, and so I am not equipped to make policy recommendations.
Right.
I can't make those normative sort of like we should do this or we should do that statements. I can tell you what the perspective is from people who study this in different ways. And so one of them is, like you just laid out, we are behind on this. We've got to catch up. And the way to do that is to take what seem like drastic actions, closing schools, closing bars, closing restaurants, encouraging people to just straight up stay inside.
Canceling kids' birthday parties, things like that that parents would never think of.
Sure. We have a story that that Beth Adams, our Morning Edition host, just played that I put together yesterday talking about what's important for parents to know while school is out, which is this is not a time to schedule play dates, to start vacations, to go to places, to just move your kids to a different place. The point is to create distance. And so for closing schools to work, doctors are telling me you've got to have parents who are willing to make those changes.
So there's another important point, I think, here, which is Brett is evaluating what the experts in different places are saying. Again, Brett's not saying we should do this or should not do this, but he is observing the changing tone locally, how it's changed over the last just several days, and how experts in other places are dealing. Now, last week, you don't want to talk about being direct, be tough. This is hard. Last week, the mayor of Rochester said our system can handle whatever will come. And that is not true. I wish that were true. That is not true anywhere in the world with this disease right now. It is just not. And if that conveys in you a sense of confidence, hearing that from the mayor, that whatever comes, you know, nobody wants to make you panic and you think the health system can't handle it. But at some point, we must be direct with people and let them know the system is not built for what is coming. And so you have a role, not just them, to fix it. You and me, we all have roles. Because the system is not built for it. That is just honest.
Right. So the people that I'm talking to are saying that the system as it exists in the status quo cannot handle what's coming. And so that's why they are asking us to make these changes. Now, there is a chance that given some of these actions, you know, depending on how this all bears out, that the healthcare system can handle, at least to an extent, that we don't have to maybe make life and death decisions about who gets treatment or who doesn't. Mm-hmm. There is a chance that the healthcare system can bear this. But everyone I'm talking to is saying to get there, to get to that point, to avoid being overloaded, we have to make some changes to, you know, from closing schools to asking people to stay inside and work from home, all those sorts of things, you know, not gathering for a child's birthday party, all those sorts of things they're saying are necessary. There are just over 2,000 hospital beds in Monroe County. That count includes all types of hospital beds. That's ICU beds, but it's also like maternity beds, neonatal beds, psychiatric beds. And during a tough flu season, those beds are already pretty near their capacity. And so hospital systems locally are looking to sort of expand, and they just got permission from the state health department to sort of expand the definition of what constitutes a bed, or to fit more beds into a smaller space than usual. And so hospital systems are getting ready. And the hope among public officials here and health officials is that with the sorts of changes that they're asking for now, you know, just over the last few days, they're really starting to be more adamant about those changes. But the hope is that with those changes to the healthcare system and to our behavior locally, that this won't be a system that overloads our ability to care for people.
The other question that I think is important, and I'm sure it's been frustrating for reporters who want to get information, is this. Again, being direct, we don't have anywhere near the number of ventilators that will be needed. And that's what Dr. Anthony Fauci has said all weekend, but he's been saying that for days. Now, I am ignorant about how this process works. I am confused about why weeks or months ago there wasn't an emergency order for whatever Joe Schmo company to convert to all ventilator production. I am hopeful and assuming that that has now been in process, but I've heard nothing publicly yet. What do you got?
What I can speak to is that manufacture of healthcare products is not a straightforward thing. That in general, there are a lot of rules around these things. And in general, in normal circumstances, you usually really want those rules in place because they ensure that the machines that you're buying work. They ensure that the tests that you're running work. But some of those restrictions are being loosened. That's how just about 2 weeks ago, I was talking to doctors locally, health officials locally, who are saying it's probably going to be about a month until we have the ability to offer testing for COVID-19 here. Sunday, we got the ability. Rochester Regional now has a limited number of tests that
they can run. Which does not mean call them and go ask for a test.
It absolutely does not. And they were very clear about that. They said, if you show up asking for a test, you will be sent back home. We have a small number of tests and they're available in only limited clinical circumstances. But it does reduce the turnaround time for getting results back in high priority cases. So things are changing. I mean, this is, you know, on the sort of physical capacity level, ventilators, hospital beds, tests, reagents to run those tests, things are changing really quickly. There is still a feeling among some healthcare providers locally that we are far behind where we need to be on that, though.
Okay. Anything else that stands out to you going forward here before we turn our attention to something lighter and take our mind off this for a bit?
The rules around all of this are continuing to change. Governor Cuomo just ended a press conference right before I came on the air, talking about the importance of closing bars, restaurants, casinos, limiting gatherings to more than 50 people. I mean, all of this stuff continues to change, but the constant message from government leaders is keep your distance from other people.
Yeah, just one more final point on that. If you are staying home now and you're doing what you can, you got to try to convince someone else to do it. We all heard from people this weekend who observed that the bars were packed, which is amazing. That's like putting kindling into a fire. We saw a lot of people slow to believe this. And part of it, Brett, is because they say they feel healthy. That is not relevant in this time.
That's why schools are closing, right? It's a, in general, you know, I'm no doctor, but in general, this is a low-risk disease for the youngest among us. But those people can be disease vectors, and that's part of the aim of distancing. It's to reduce contact with people who don't have COVID-19 in such a serious case that they need to go to a hospital, that they need to seek health care. And so some of those people don't even know that they're carrying the infection. The aim of all of these distancing measures is to prevent people who are carrying from infecting somebody who is going to develop a more severe case. That's, health officials say, how you save lives and how you reduce the burden on the healthcare system.
The model for testing around the world so far has been Korea. And the best evidence they have is that the 20 to 29-year-olds carry this disease and spread it the most. That is harrowing. That's largely the crowds we saw at the bars. So you've got to try to convince someone that this is not about them. Now, that also doesn't mean that people won't get sick. The last point on this is, there's still a lot to learn here. And again, this is not to make anyone scared, because we now know from a lot of estimates that we're at a point where a lot of people will get this year. The hope is it will be slow and spread out so medical systems can handle that, but a lot of people will get it. And a lot of people will recover. Most people will recover.
Yep.
But you also shouldn't just assume, if you're in your 20s, that it will be a nothing. Because it might be, but it might not be. And that's probably important too. Don't be nonchalant, I think. Is that fair? Would the experts probably agree with that?
I expect so. I mean, it's not the health burden or the infection severity in younger people is certainly not as bad given the data that we have now as it is on older people. But you're right. That does not mean that younger people are immune to it. It doesn't mean that they don't get sick. It doesn't mean that they don't end up in the hospital.
Sometimes in the hospital. Yeah, sometimes. I mean, at much lower rates, it's true. And fortunately, this is a disease that allows people who contract it, who are younger and fitter, to kind of quarantine at home. And that's still what they want. They don't want you showing up asking for a test if you spike a fever. We're doing our best here. So as I let you go, I just want to express some gratitude for the work that Brett and colleagues have done. Journalists are going to keep working on this. Listeners, I think you know now the importance of local journalism. And yes, I'm going to continue to make that point. I'm a homer for WXXI and Public Radio. And we're going to be here in one form or another. I am of the mind, Brett, that it is not panic to be honest. And if the facts that are honest are grim, we must let people deal with that appropriately.
That's what we do in
that's
reporting.
Not flogging the worst of it just for the sake of it, or telling people that the worst of the worst is going to happen. But we also, if we are going to get buy-in from the public, we can't just go around saying, well, the system will handle it. The system will handle it. We have to take another course.
We work in the public interest. That's the aim of what we do in all of our reporting. And if the truth is grim, we still have to report it. That's our job as reporters, as journalists. And it's important to convey the best facts that we have when we have them. And so, you know, when we get good news, we're happy to report good news. When we have news that government officials, health officials are saying our healthcare system is at risk and its ability to care for people is at risk unless we take some pretty drastic actions to change the way that we behave, we have to report that also. That's our job.
You know what I look forward to?
What?
When we can hold parades again. And we're going to put medical practitioners up there. We're going to put doctors and nurses, and we are going to go crazy for them.
It's a good parade.
Because that's the heroes in our community, and it's going to be a hard go for them. So let's all rally for them, and let's do what they need us to do. Hey, thank you. Always good.
Thanks for having me. I've been proud to do it.
Brett Dahlberg is WXXI's health reporter, doing some of the most important work in this community. And there's a lot of good journalists, by the way, here and in other places who are working hard for you. So let's get our minds off this for a bit, can we? Let's do that. Let's take our only break of the hour, and let's talk a little music when we come back. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about what's happening in the small business world. There's a lot of fear that people are about to lose everything they have worked for, their livelihoods, their companies, their businesses. You can understand why people are scared. It's a time for empathy for small business owners and our friends and colleagues there. They're going to tell us what they're doing and what they think we all can do next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. And now for something completely different, because we need that. You know, on local stages across America, bands are finding success through, in normal times anyway, and that's where we are, because we're going to get back there eventually, impersonating other bands. And according to a 2017 piece in Express News, bands, even critically acclaimed ones, are finding success and making good money by doing tribute work. Big scene happening in Rochester there, and you might have seen the recent piece for City newspaper. Frank DeBlaise wrote, quote, "I've been kind of live and let live when it comes to tribute bands. Who are they hurting, really? Just because they didn't write the song doesn't mean they can't play it accurately or in some compelling way. However, the numbers are out of control. I know it's easy to spout off about musicians who perform other people's music full-time. Low-hanging fruit, right? But these bands are setting listeners up for chronic complacency," end quote. That's the great Frank DeBlaise. Well, musicians from marginalized communities have been speaking out about that. They say breaking onto the scene is difficult enough for a number of reasons. And one among them is that Rochester is oversaturated with bands, and in particular, cover bands. This hour, we talk to local musicians who say that original music doesn't get the love and attention it deserves, especially if it comes from marginalized communities. It's a show idea originally comes to us from local journalist Tiana Magnon, who is always a fount of great ideas. I'd like to welcome our guests for the hour who are all on the line with us. Charles Emmanuel. Charles, how are you?
I am well. Thank you for having me.
Hey, somebody's got their radio up, and now you got to turn it down and listen through your phones. That's the way the work. That's all right. That's the way the world works now. Avis Reese, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Very good. Zahir Roll, how are you, Zahir?
I'm good. It's actually Zahia.
Oh, Zahia. Sorry, Zahia.
Don't worry. Hey, I know, odd spelling.
And do we also have Danielle Ponder with us? Danielle. Oh, I don't hear Danielle Ponder. Let's see if we can get her hooked in here. This is new for us. This is a lot of phone guests. So we're doing our best, everybody. So first of all, let me just kind of go down the list here. How are you hanging in there with these strange times as musicians, as artists? How about you, Charles?
Well, it's already hard out here as is, and I haven't had any like cancellations or anything yet, but with some of my colleagues have been like expressing that's happening to them. I just have to like prepare myself for it to happen, and also come up with means of just trying to keep myself afloat in rough times like these. Funny enough, someone stole my wallet out of my car today, so that's just a great way to just let myself know that I need to prepare myself for the rough ride that's coming.
Yeah. Avis, how about you?
I think it's a little hard to kind of grasp so far. I've had several cancellations already, even some kind of reaching out further than I would like to think. And so just kind of not really knowing when things are going to get back to normal. And even I also play in the church as well. And like yesterday, one of my services was canceled. And, you know, just kind of thinking about how much is about to change is a little daunting. But I'm really hoping that with everyone kind of being on the same page this early on, it won't be nearly as long. That's the hope.
Yeah. Zahia?
Yeah, the same. Although in my situation, the gig weren't canceled for me. I actually made a decision to cancel two of the shows that I had, mostly because I'm a mother and I have a daughter who has respiratory issues. Mm-hmm. So for me, I couldn't even put myself in that situation of potentially infecting my daughter. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a scary to think, and I'm already thinking about just trying to be creative and trying to come up with alternatives of how we can make this just a new way of living as a musician full time. So
sure, and let me check again. Danielle Ponder, we got you now. Maybe it's an issue of 3 versus 4 lines. So we're going to keep trying to reconfigure and maybe bring Danielle in a different way, though we do have Danielle joining us for the next hour. So now let's talk a little bit about what it's like on a music scene like Rochester, which, as City News reports, Zahia, we've got a lot of cover bands. There's a lot of there's a lot of stages and taken up by cover bands. And really, truthfully, for music, there's a limited number of stages you can get onto. What is it like for you trying to break through in a scene like this right now? And again, these questions are now going to be based on the quote-unquote normal that we're going to try to get back to post-pandemic. But what has it been like for you?
I really find I'm in a unique situation because I'm in I book for an original band and for a cover band. And I will say that for when it comes to original music, the biggest thing that kind of irks me is this notion that you have to pay dues still. I feel like even last year, 2019, 2020, even moving forward, I feel like that's a conversation that needs to be just nulled. I feel like musicians put enough time and effort into their craft prior to even hitting the stage where we shouldn't have to be in these situations where venues expect us to continue to, quote, pay dues and take these losses when it comes to original music.
But what does it mean exactly to pay dues, Zahia?
A lot of times, and I understand venues, you know, they need to make money. And a lot of times venues will expect musicians to pay for just bar drink or play for just bar drinks or, you know, $100 for an entire band or 50% of the door even. It's just very and bands, you know, we put in a lot of effort to try and even get people to come out to our shows because we don't want to perform for empty crowds. So the amount of work you put into promoting yourself and, you know, getting people to come and then venues will not in return compensate properly for things like that. Not all venues. And I say Rochester, I'm so grateful that we actually have venues that support original scenes. But there are definitely areas where that doesn't happen.
Well, our engineer Rob says the high is amazing, and big love for some of our listeners for your work. Maybe we can listen to a little bit of a cut from Zahia. Do we have that, Rob? Can we do? I think we've got. How did we get here, Zahia?
Yay!
All right.
Awesome.
So why don't we listen to a little bit, and we'll come out and talk about it.
Okay.
I love myself today, not like yesterday, 'cause I'm cool, I'm calm, I'm gonna be okay. Say, I love myself today, not like yesterday, 'cause I'm cool, I'm calm, and I'm gonna be okay.
Oh my God, this is exactly what we need during these weird
Yay!
Times. This is exactly.
Happy.
Oh my,
happy
yes.
Happy joy. Happy joy.
Everybody listening to public radio is going, oh my gosh, I forgot I can still move. I can still dance.
Right.
That is really, really good stuff, Zahia. So.
Thanks.
So why don't you let listeners know a little bit more about where to find you more normally, you know, typically now?
Yeah, I do a lot of work with Vanishing Sun. That's the original band that I'm working with. And we, you know, honestly, I can't even tell you when our next performance will be because some things for Vanishing Sun have been canceled recently, including our planetarium project, which was supposed to be the 20th and 21st.
But where are you online?
Online. You can catch us at Vanishing Sun band.com or Facebook or Instagram. Either one of those, you can follow us and kind of keep it as we keep you posted with what happens next.
Vanishing Sun online, and
yes.
Yeah, we're all living online for a while. So, but the music is there,
yeah.
and listeners, not only is the music there, you can still support artists in a lot of ways, even during this time. That is definitely true. Let me ask Avis Reese, who's also with us here. Why don't you tell us, listeners, a little bit about your work?
Well, I guess kind of with the whole cover band thing versus original band, working with Danielle, most of my work is with original music. And, you know, we've been really fortunate to have a lot of local support here and support in other places as well. But just most recently, I did a residency at Three Heads, and every week was basically a cover week. Like, I didn't do any original music.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting. Like, I kind of had a conversation with some friends afterwards. Like, it was a lot of fun to do, but I just can't see myself being passionate doing that as my primary thing. Like, I think my heart will probably always be with original music or supporting original artists. And it's really no, you know, not trying to put down folks who their primary thing is a cover band, but it's just something different for me personally. And I think, I mean, not everyone is, you know, fortunate to kind of have a collective group where, you know, everybody's kind of on the same page about original music and all those things. So it's very kind of interesting to kind of have a foot in both sides, you know, at different points in my life, and kind of know what I get personally from the two different musical worlds. And just now this conversation of how there's all these tribute bands and things coming up locally. It's a hard conversation kind of to have to, when you kind of put it in the framework of, is it okay, or should this be, or should it not be, you know?
But how much is there, Avis, a racial component to who gets a shot on Rochester stages right now?
Oh, okay. It's a very big.
I suspect that's a bit of a softball.
Oh, you want me to go there?
Let's go there. Let's go there.
Yeah,
let's go there.
Yes,
let's go there.
And I'm the right one to go there. I think for me personally, so with my residency, I was very intentional that, one, I did it during Black History Month, and that every week the stage was full of Black musicians and Black singers. And I had conversations with Jeff about this because, you know, I've seen a few residencies and I enjoyed them, but for me personally, it was, you know, very rare to see people of color on the stage other than maybe one person for, you know, 1 week, or, you know, it's very, very sprinkled in there. And it was interesting to me every week, people who would come up to me and say, oh my God, like, who is this person? Who is this person that I had on stage with me? And these people haven't been performing for 15, 20 years in Rochester, but it's very clear that, you know, they've been performing on stages that really aren't always as inclusive. And these are some of the main places that people think when they say the Rochester music scene. They think of these places like, I won't name names, but it's just a very clear divide on the main places that you think are, you know, thriving for the Rochester music scene really don't have a lot of Black or people of color artists on those stages. So
Charles, you I'm sorry. Go ahead, Avis.
No. I'm done rambling.
You're not rambling. This is, Charles, I heard everybody want to jump on that. Charles Emanuel, you want to take that next? Go ahead.
It's a very tricky, it's a very funny line because, like Sahaya and Avis, I'm in both realms, where I find myself now. And I don't know, I feel like part of it could be racial, but I feel like another part of it is just that people don't know what to either expect from me, or I'm not reaching across enough to anyone else so that they can hear my original stuff, because I have original material. I have two EPs worth of material, and I do those in my shows, but I tend to now mix them with covers to get people's attention more. Because I've noticed, like, I just had a show on Friday at Seven Story Brewing, and the attention when you do Gnarls Barkley's Crazy is not going to be the same when you do Flow by Charles Emmanuel. It's not, you don't get the same reaction. And I started noticing that after my first EP, and I was very adamant about, like, I'm just doing my songs, and that's it. You come to see me, you're coming to hear me, that's it. And then I realized, like, it didn't really work out a lot in my favor most times. So I ended up introducing covers here and there, maybe one or two, and then it turned into five or six, and the next, you know, half of my set is covers. So I tend to, like, I try my best, like, adapting to what's going on and still putting a piece in there. And then, you like, there'll be a few times when someone will go, oh, who's that song by? That's mine. So there are some moments when that'll happen, but I'm basically rolling with the punches and just trying to figure out how to just put more of me into other people's work.
I think we got Danielle Ponder now. Are you there, Danielle?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can. Hey, it's great to hear your voice. You want to pick up the thread there?
Yeah, I kind of been listening to a little bit of what everyone was saying. I think, you know, I would add that I really don't think there's anything wrong with artists doing covers, but it's more so who the people in power choose to amplify. Mm-hmm. And if you are in a venue and you have booked five Dave Matthews cover bands or Fish cover bands before you have booked one black artist, that's a problem. If you're in a venue and you look at your calendar and notice you have not one band of color on your calendar, maybe with the exception of our band. If you have not hired anyone other than Danielle Ponder, who is of color, for your venue, that's something that people need to be intentional about. White venues really have to be intentional about diversifying their spaces. For people of color, our social networks tend to have less influence and less disposable income, and that's due to the wealth gap that exists between blacks and white Americans. So we're less likely to know someone who owns a music venue. We're less likely to know someone who runs a festival.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think these owners have to be very deliberate about diversifying their calendars.
And so, Danielle, I got to sort of follow up the first point you're making there, which I think is really important and really interesting here. I remember several years ago when the Oscars So White thread really got rolling, and it was a writer and a woman by the name of April Rain who was really behind the movement there. And all of a sudden, she started getting writing gigs, and she was asked to do all kinds of work, some paid, some media appearances, etc. And it got to the point where she actually jumped on social media and said, hey, writers, and hey, gatekeepers, like, I'm thrilled to get all the offers, but there's a lot more women of color, writers of color who have different thoughts on this besides just me. And now, Danielle, you know, you are probably as Rochester famous as it gets, and if I have my way, you'll be international famous, of course. But do you feel like you're at that point, too, where you see the gatekeepers and they go, well, we know Danielle Ponder, we'll book Danielle Ponder, and that's sort of like enough for a while? Is that kind of how it feels?
Oh, yeah. I definitely think that's the way it is. I've definitely tried to open the doors for other artists. That's Charles Emmanuel, someone who came on a European tour with us. And I just connected him the other day to Corn Hill Festival along with some other artists. But there is this ideal that we've checked off diversity because we have a black soul singer. There was a festival that was a reggae festival, and there was not one artist of color on the bill for a reggae festival. Whoa. What was that?
Oh, you know how I feel about that.
Yeah. Shame. So, you know, this could be a whole other conversation where we could probably take over the studio. But and I don't think it's that any of these venue owners are deliberately saying we don't want people of color in here. That's maybe when it comes to hip hop, there's something we should discuss. But in general, I don't think they're deliberately saying that. I just think that we live in a segregated world, a segregated society, and you know who you know. And unfortunately for people of color, we don't tend to know the movers and shakers. I can't think of one music venue in Rochester that's owned by a person of color. I can't think of one festival in Monroe County in Western New York that is ran by a person of color. So our sphere of influence is smaller, but I would say music venues so white, just like they said. And we got to do something about it.
Well, so let's listen a little bit more music. We got a cut from Charles. Charles, I'm trying to see what we got. A couple of years. Oh, I see. We're gonna kick with the hour with "Be Good to Yourself." But I think we're gonna listen to Obia now. Is that all right?
Okay. Hey.
Let's listen. This is Charles Emmanuel.
So long to garner your attention. Feeling every part of you and gaining your affection. But sometimes I can shake this feeling that you're giving me. But maybe this is something I'm not meant to see. Oh, this ain't ordinary love.
Yeah, we need this so much.
Oh my God.
Don't you? Don't you feel? Don't you all feel like the world just needs this?
Oh. Yeah.
Oh God. That's beautiful, Charles. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Huh, that song was how do I put it? Like, just a weird love song in a way. It's where you don't, I like you, but I feel like the reasons I like you are, like, I'm already thinking that something bad is going to happen, so I don't trust the way this feels. It's too good to be true, in a sense. So it's basically me saying, you put a spell on me, and I don't know if what I'm feeling is actually love, or you just playing with my mind, or you really good at lying, you know. So,
well,
yeah.
Thank you for that. We need him.
Don't date Scorpios. That's all I'm saying.
Nobody, the married one.
Nobody's allowed to date right now, anyway. So you know, it's all right. Gallows humor. You're going to hear a little bit of that in Connections. We try to stay sane in the weeks ahead. Charles, where are people going to find most of your work right now?
I'm on Spotify, Apple Music, CharlesEmmanuelMusic.com. I'm all over social media like that. Twitter. Everything's Charles Emmanuel. That's Emmanuel with one M. That's all you'll see me around.
Is that you strumming that guitar?
That's 9 times out of 10 I'll play guitar on my track. So that is me.
So this weekend,
and on the drums.
You know, this weekend I'm dealing with, like, you know, the isolation. So I pulled my Taylor out of storage this weekend, and I want to know what you're playing these days. What do you pick up most of the time?
In terms of, like, covers?
No, the kind of guitar, man.
Oh, Lord, I currently have an Eastman guitar.
Mm-hmm.
It has this very light sound. It's very light on the fingers. I had an Ibanez before, but I'm kind of in love. I kind of like the Taylors too. One of my musician friends, John Sheffer, I think he has an acoustic Taylor. It sounds really good, but I'm really in love with my Eastman right now.
All right. Well, I think we're okay to take a couple of calls now. We got a thumbs up back there? Mm-hmm. We do. All right. So let me just squeeze in a couple of calls, and we'll get some more music here. This is different, Charles. Charles in Greece. Go ahead, Charles.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I also play in a band in town called Some Ska Band. And I'd like to point out that, like most every band, we started off only playing covers. You know, you get 8-10 musicians in a room, and the only thing you know are somebody else's stuff. So we always try to, you start off with covers, and you try to make them your own, and you try to do something a little bit different. And then from there, you go to build some original music as a band. It might be different with an individual. You can start off and do your own stuff from day one. But when you get, like a ska band, in our band, 10 members on the stage, it's kind of hard to do something original from day one. So we started off that way, and we went that route. But, yeah, there's definitely a problem with getting enough pay for your band. And when you have 10 members in a band, 10 whatever you're paying divided by 10 is just about nothing. So it doesn't work out for much, but that is a reality. And you do have to respect that when people come out to a bar or they want to see a band, whatever they're doing, you know, they want to hear what they want to hear. And so you've got to throw in a couple covers. The good thing about playing ska, though, nobody knows ska music. So they think every cover we play is an original.
That's funny. Thank you, Charles. Yeah, maybe I don't know. We've never done a ska show. Maybe I'm not cool enough for that. I'm definitely not cool enough to do most music shows we do, but we try. So, Hoover in Rochester next. Go ahead, Hoover.
Yeah, there was a thank you for taking the call. There was a comment about 3 or 4 minutes ago about the venues not being a minority owned. Well, I just want to remind folks that one of the premier jazz locations in Rochester was Pithod Room. It's on the Clarissa, mm-hmm. owner Clarissa. And Troop Shoot. I used to go there when I was a kid, in fact, underage, and, you know, with a fake ID. So I've been there. And, you know, the city tore the building down about 4 decades ago. And that was one of the premier jazz locations between New York City and Chicago. And all the guys who were touring and with their bands, they would stop at the Pithod Room for a night or two, and they would play before they moved on to Buffalo and Cleveland and Detroit and Chicago. There was another minority-owned jazz club on West Main Street, about 3 blocks down from Nick Tahoe's, and that was active in the 70s for about 8 or 10 years, and I don't know whatever happened to that because I moved away from Rochester, but I just want to let you know that there were clubs, and they, like most clubs, they're not sustainable because music is a temporary fashion, and people get in and get out of the business fairly quickly. All right. So anyway, that's my comment.
Hoover, thank you. So real quick, let me just go down the list. Danielle, where are the best places in town to see shows when the world goes back to normal?
That are people of color owned.
Well, I mean, people of color owned, truly supporting supporting artists in the ways that you'd like to see.
One place that obviously we love Three Heads Brewing. We think Jeff is amazing. Yeah. He wants to take care of artists. I really think mm-hmm. diversity is important to Jeff. I also got to shout Woody out at Cornhill Festival, who said, hey, help me mm-hmm. out. We need to get some soul acts in here. Mm-hmm. Anthology, Phil, he's always treated us with so much love and respect. So we definitely have good venues here. I just think we all could do a better job of being more intentional about our calendars. And one thing I want to add, Evan, is all of those jazz clubs that we had, they no longer exist. And
they
one thing we have to recognize is as Rochester, as poverty worsens for African Americans and the wealth gap increases for African Americans, you're going to see black businesses get the brunt of that. And so that's why we currently have no music venues, because we are now one of the worst places for African Americans to live in the United mm-hmm. States. So that definitely has an effect on the black music industry of Rochester.
Hey, I got to play 30 seconds of Danielle's Holding Me Down, which everyone should have paid for and downloaded by now. Let's listen.
And this is a sad song.
It's beautiful, though.
Hold me down.
If I had it my way, I would start all over.
Danielle, what's the timeline for a new album?
June 14th is supposed to be our album release, so we'll see how Corona goes.
June 14th, depending on what the world looks like then.
Yes.
So
as it might be an online release.
As we wrap this program this hour, Danielle's going to hang on with us, and we're going to talk about the impact on small business owners next hour. So, Danielle, I will not say goodbye to you, but I will say to Zahia Roll, great having you, and thank you for your music. This is a great reminder that music is sustaining. Music can really lift us up, and your work is just beautiful, and I hope more people find it. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
And Zahia, one more time online, where do you want people to go?
VanishingSunBand.com or Facebook, Instagram, Vanishing Sun.
Vanishing
as in
Sun
the
Sun, Band.
Yeah, as in the sun in the sky, not the sun like you give birth to.
S-U-N. Yes. Avis, thanks for the insight and the time. Awesome having you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Charles Emmanuel, one more time. Where do you want people to find your work?
CharlesEmmanuelMusic.com, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Everything's Charles Emmanuel. That's Emmanuel with one M. And, yeah, that's how you can keep up with everything Charles Emmanuel.
By the way, the title of this next song as we close the hour from Charles is Be Good to Yourself. And I don't know four words more appropriate than that right now as we all figure this out. Wow. Hey, thanks, everyone. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
All right, let's listen to Charles Emmanuel take us to the next hour. Here.
Hold on, be strong, one step at a time. Be wise, be kind, you're doing just fine. Things won't always be at your demand.